Get a deeper connection with the Cougars of BYU Sports.
God gives us a gift, and we use that gift until he takes it away.
Deep Blue.
Just sitting down afterward and being really tired and thinking like, wow, I just won the U.S. championship.
This is Deep Blue. Here's your host, Jason Shepherd.
Thanks for tuning in for a new episode of Deep Blue. This is the show where we get to know the person behind the number that you see on the field or the court. These are the true stories of BYU athletes and coaches from their own mouths. My guest is new BYU basketball head coach, Kevin Young. Coach Young, thank you so much for doing this. This is awesome. I appreciate you stopping by today.
Of course. Appreciate you having me on.
Here's what I want to know. How in the world did you carve out some time to do this? You've got to be one of the busiest guys out there right now with everything you've got on your plate.
Yeah, no, there's a lot moving around, but it's good, though. You know, I like being busy. I like being kind of in the middle of things, and that's certainly how it's been here so far. But things are starting to slow down a little bit and normalize.
Before April, before you got the job at BYU as an assistant coach in the NBA, how often did you get recognized out and about?
I could fly under the radar pretty good. You know, sometimes at church, you know, would get a lot pretty questiony, you know, with a lot of questions about games and stuff. But for the most part, was able to kind of slide under the radar.
Can you slide under the radar now?
Definitely much harder. You know, there's hoodies and hats and glasses and things that are a little bit more normal. But, you know, to me, it just kind of speaks to, you know, the excitement of the community. And, you know, it's certainly better than the alternative, that's for sure.
And that's one of the reasons why this job, among other things, was so appealing to you, because there is a passion for BYU basketball.
Yeah, I mean, I think the best way to describe it that I've told, like, other people, I think this place is set up to succeed. Like, a lot of jobs are not set up to succeed. This one is, from a fan base standpoint, from a, you know, just the support all over. It rears its head in many ways, and the fan support is a major one of them.
What do you think you're going to miss the most about the NBA?
Just the level of talent, you know, being able to coach the best players in the world. You know, obviously, you know, my track record, I had a lot of fortune in terms of the level of player I was able to coach. And so, you know, not being able to be with those types of guys night in and night out is definitely something I'll miss. What I won't miss is, on the flip side, having a game plan against, you know, the world's absolute greatest players. Won't miss that. But, you know, NBA is a great league, a lot of good friends in that league, but super excited about this next challenge.
All right, let's get to know you a little bit more on a personal level. So you were originally born in Salt Lake, grew up near Dallas, and then lived around Atlanta as a teenager. Did I get that right?
Well done.
Okay, so why did you guys move around so much?
Yeah, so my parents are from out west, and my mom lived in Orem, actually, till she was about 10, and moved out to the Bay Area, met my dad. And then my dad was kind of bouncing, you know, around for his job, you know, different situations for him. You know, I'm one of six, so he was, you know, looking for different opportunities to support the family, and that took us all the way, you know, out east. And, you know, I think by moving out east away from kind of any kind of extended family, you know, it really grew our family super, super close together. Like, I'm super tight with all my siblings and my parents. And so it's, I think, pretty fortunate to have the relationships, you know, kind of that we had. And I think that was a byproduct of, you know, the way we moved.
Because you've lived in a couple of different places, when somebody asks you, oh, where are you from? What do you consider home?
So I claim Atlanta as where I'm from. You know, in terms of home, you know, that's tricky, just because we've bounced around, even as a, you know, married and a professional, you know, we've kind of bounced around quite a bit. But, you know, we home base, like, Phoenix has kind of become a home base. You know, my wife's from Omaha. Her family has been there for generations, and we spend a lot of time there in the off season and stuff. So we have some places that still have some built-in, like, you know, homes, so to speak.
You mentioned that as you guys were moving around, it really galvanized the family unit together, because that's the one constant, regardless of where you lived. You know, you had your parents and your brothers and your sisters. What type of role did sports play? Was it always a part of your life from a very early age?
Yeah, I mean, so there's five boys and one girl in my family. And funny enough, like, neither one of my parents was super, super sports oriented, probably more my mom than my dad. But, you know, my older brother, Justin, he kind of has always been a sports guy, and it kind of rubbed off on me as the next oldest boy. And then, you know, I just remember as a kid just playing basketball at the park with the older kids and just running home before dark. Like, that's just what I did every day. And so, you know, whether it was that or it was, you know, playing, you know, football in the front yard with all the brothers and stuff, like, we've just always been pretty sports oriented people.
Well, it certainly paid off for you. And I'm not just talking about, you know, becoming a coach later in life, but pretty good high school player. What was your high school career like? And then the recruitment, because you obviously had an opportunity to play college as well.
Yeah, I mean, I was fortunate. I had a really good, awesome high school coach, Roger Quam. I still talk to him quite a bit, actually. He kind of the reason why I got into coaching in the first place. Had a really good high school team, a lot of great teammates. Many of them I still keep in contact with. So we had it was super fun. Like, high school for me was super fun because of sports. And I actually remember the first time my high school coach, you know, mentioned that he felt like I could play college basketball. I just remember the feeling like, oh man, that's amazing. And so, you know, I was always like, I was a good player. I wasn't like a unbelievable player, but, you know, gritty, could shoot, could guard, you know, play defense and stuff like that. So, got recruited small college, didn't love any of the options coming out of high school. I went to junior college for a couple years, and then, you know, had a couple small Division I schools that recruited me, but ultimately, like, my wheelhouse was kind of like the high-end D2 schools, right? So I went to one in Atlanta. And at the time, I was actually considering serving a mission after my second year of junior college. And then actually when I took all my visits, I told all the coaches that recruited me, like, hey, I'm only going to come for a year, and then I'm going to go do this mission thing, and then I'll finish up. And so, you know, that couple coaches kind of wrote me off before that, and one of the ones that didn't was where I ended up going. I ended up just staying there and playing ball and not doing the mission after all. But you know, that's kind of the way the recruitment process went for me.
So you mentioned you go JUCO, so Middle Georgia College, and I believe it's now Middle Georgia State University. Mm-hmm. And then after that, you end up going to Clayton State mm-hmm. University. How would you describe your college career? What type of when you look back on that time, what do you remember?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, like, the junior college portion of it was just, it was in the middle of nowhere. It wasn't a lot. I remember one of my teammates, he was telling me, you know, he had to stay and do, like, summer school. He was a year older than me, and he was just like, man, I remember I was here on campus during the summer, and, man, there was literal tumbleweeds that were rolling by the thing as I was walking to class. And so, you know, super small college feel in the middle of nowhere. Like I said, there wasn't much to it outside of school and basketball. And so, you know, kind of helped me just get better as a player. And then in terms of Clayton State, where I transferred, you know, I went there because it was about 40 miles from home. Three of my brothers were better high school football players. So they were all linebackers, and the three of them were right there together. So every tackle was like, young on the tackle. So it was fun to just be around and go to their high school games and stuff like that. And it was a good blend for me of, like, still being close enough to home to, you know, support my siblings, and then kind of still have a little bit of a, you know, kind of college life as well.
After your playing career is done, there's some, for those that get into coaching, a lot of times it seems to fall into one of two categories. One, it's what they always wanted to do. Mm-hmm. And then others, sometimes either they fall into it or an opportunity that maybe they didn't see coming presents itself, and then it starts them on that path. Which was it for you?
I always wanted to coach. I mean, like I said, Roger Quam, my high school coach, was basically the reason why I wanted to coach. I just felt like he had a great life. He had five kids. He coached ball and just seemed like life was good for him. And that's kind of what I wanted to do. So I set out to be a high school coach. And then it was my story more of a opportunity, you know, one thing led to another type of deal. And, you know, like I said, I set out to be a high school coach, and, you know, before I know it, like, I'm in the NBA world. It was just kind of just the way things kind of unfolded for me.
Was it, I mean, one of those situations, just like that, you go from one level to the next? I mean, was your head spinning at the time?
I mean, I was so just caught up in what I was doing, you know, at the time, of just trying to, you know, do my job well wherever it might be. And you know, I don't know, man, I just never really cared. I just, whatever job I had, I would just kind of immerse myself into it. And you know, I got lucky probably along the way, meeting the right people, and timing of things worked out. And you know, took a long time to get to the NBA. I mean, I was in small college and minors in Europe for, you know, better part of, you know, I guess probably 11 or 12 years. And, you know, ultimately found my way that led me to the NBA world. So it was kind of a long, strange path for sure.
While it was long, can you imagine your life or not having those experiences? Can you imagine where you would be now without those experiences along the way?
Yeah, not really. I mean, I think what helped me the most was just being a young head coach. You know, a lot of people are assistants and then they ascend, right? And then they get a head coaching job. For me, it was kind of different. I was an assistant for 2 seasons and then I got a head coaching job, you know, at 23 over in Ireland, which level of play is not great, but it wouldn't have mattered. You know, just the ability to just be a head coach, have to make all the decisions, you know, and I was actually the general manager too, so I'm signing players, I'm doing the whole bit, right? And so that was, you know, just having an early leadership role, I think, was probably the most impactful thing for me. And then I went on to be an assistant for a few more years after that in the G League, D League back then. And then I was a head coach again for, you know, 4 or 5 years and then went back to being an assistant. So it gave me a unique perspective on, you know, what a head coaching job is like. And then I go be an assistant again, right? And how that made me a better assistant, I felt like. And now I'm back to being a head coach and I'm you know, reminded of things, you know, daily about, you know, what it's like to be a head coach, how many different people are, you know, pulling at you isn't the right word, but how many people are, you know, you're responsible for ultimately. And so it is a transition, but I think my experience of kind of doing both along the way has really helped.
There was a certain young lady who was going to school at BYU that eventually you would meet. How did that come to be?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, that was one of the reasons why I moved to Utah in the first place. You know, growing up in the South, the dating pool on the LDS side was limited. So, you know, I always kind of wanted to move out west. It never really worked out for me from a, you know, college standpoint. And so, you know, got an opportunity at UVSC, Utah Valley State College at the time, to kind of come coach out there. And I moved in with a buddy of mine, and my brother ultimately had an apartment that was BYU approved housing, and my wife's sister was actually in our ward, and that's how we became friends. And then she came out to visit, and you know, we met and so forth, and just kind of things took off from there.
It's probably not an easy question to answer, but what has she meant to you and your career, personally and professionally?
Yeah, I mean, she's, you know, kind of the way I did it was the hard way, you know, going through the minor leagues, living in these small towns. You know, we were having kids along the way. And, you know, so she's been there, you know, right with me, kind of, you know, sacrificing a lot, living, like I said, away from family and things like that. So she's sacrificed, you know, more than I have, honestly, to, you know, support me and allow us to have a family, but then me still, you know, chase, you know, what I love, which is obviously coaching. And so, you know, it's been a long, you know, journey for her as well. And we got to a good spot in Arizona, ultimately had a good run there. We're able to live around family there, which was really neat for both of us. And, you know, for it to kind of now bring us back to where we met is kind of ironic.
The work-life balance is something everybody goes through. Your job and being high profile, it really does have a microscope on it, and sort of, you know, it intensifies quite a bit. How have you guys been able to do that? How difficult has that been for you with that work-life balance as you've continued through your career?
Yeah, it's tricky, especially in the NBA. I mean, 82 games, you're either, you know, for basically 7, 8 months, 9 months, depending on how good your team is, you're either at a game or you're going to a game, and that's just kind of what it is for most of the year. And so, you know, I would try to, you know, time management becomes extremely critical. You know, for me, I would never sleep on any of the flights. I would just try to get all my work done on the flight so that when I got home, I was able to spend time with, you know, her and the kids. And I'm one of these guys that I know what I need to be good at my job. I'm I'm not a guy that's going to be in the office at 5 a.m. and leave at midnight. Like, I know the balance of, like, when I need to get there, what I need to get done, because I know what I need on a home life as well. And so I was fortunate to work with a lot of, like, family-oriented guys in the NBA. You know, Brett Brown, big-time family guy. Monty Williams, big-time family guy. You know, Frank Vogel, big-time family guy. And so, you know, I was afforded that. You know, a lot of times that's not the case in coaching in general, regardless of professional or collegiate. And so, you know, that's something that I really value, and certainly want to carry that into, you know, this leadership role where I kind of make that a priority for not just me, but our coaches as well.
As your coaching career progressed, there was a moment that you have called pivotal. We will get to that when we come back. This is the Deep Blue Podcast on BYU Radio. Hey Cougar fans, this is Jason Shepherd. I hope you're enjoying another season of great interviews here on Deep Blue. If you love Deep Blue, you should check out our other BYU Radio podcasts like Her Why. Lauren McLean talks about everything BYU women's athletics with current athletes and coaches, plus stars from the past. BYU has some of the best women's teams in the NCAA, and you want to hear their unique perspectives. So download and subscribe to Her Why on YouTube, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you find podcasts. Welcome back to the Deep Blue Podcast here on BYU Radio. I'm your host, Jason Shepherd. My guest is BYU head basketball coach Kevin Young. And coach, before the break, I talked about a moment that you called a pivotal time for you. In other interviews, you've described getting let go as the head coach of the NBA D League team in Iowa, the Iowa Energy. Now, obviously, it's the G League. You've called that a pivotal time. Why was that a pivotal time and a moment for you?
Well, one, I just kind of had to figure out if I was going to just throw the towel in on coaching, or if I was going to, you know, try to stick through it and keep at it. And so, you know, my wife was pregnant at the time, at which threw a whole nother kind of monkey wrench into the whole thing. And so, you know, it was pivotal because I decided, you know, hey, we're going to stick with it. And we did. And then, you know, ultimately it led us out east to Philly, Delaware specifically, you know, working for the Sixers G League team. And that ended up being that specific part was pivotal in terms of the relationships that I made out there with, quite frankly, a lot of people, you know, whether that's front office people, whether that's different coaches, you know, the timing and, where I've really seen kind of the Lord's hand in my life is just the timing aspect, right? And so, yeah, I think that was meant to be for me to go out there at that time. That was the kind of the beginning of the quote-unquote process era of the Sixers, and that was Brett Brown's first year in Philly. I didn't know him. You know, I knew someone else in their front office that I had interviewed with previously who used to work in the NBA front office. And speaking of timing, a little side note on that is I actually interviewed for a job in the NBA offices that it was not a coaching position, and one of the people that I interviewed with there ended up leaving the NBA front office and being a assistant general manager with the Sixers, and that's kind of how I even got to interview for the job in Delaware. So not getting that job in New York City ended up kind of paving the way for me later to kind of getting this job in Philadelphia, which ultimately led me to meeting Brett Brown. We ended up hitting it off, had a great rapport. And then Monty Williams ends up being on that staff. He gets the Suns job. It takes me to Phoenix. That puts me in a whole new light. I end up being the associate head coach. I could just go on and on, right? And then that led me to kind of a whole new profile of an assistant coach in the NBA world, which led me to getting a lot of interviews and potential head coaching jobs in the NBA, which kind of then brings me here, right? And so it is, right? Like, it's, I don't think any of that stuff happened by chance. You know, I do think that, you know, it was all, you know, part of the plan, you know, and not just professionally, but, you know, Melissa and I living out east by ourselves with young kids and like fortifying our relationship, going through raising kids sort of by ourselves and isolated and stuff like that. And so none of that would have happened if I would have not gotten fired from the Iowa Energy position. And so it really was a pivotal time.
Isn't it funny how the Lord works, where in the moment we think it's the worst thing possible, like how could this be happening to me? And then you look down the road, you look back on it, it's like, this is exactly what needed to happen. And to follow up on that too, can you imagine going through all of these life-changing decisions without a foundation in the gospel and having faith to know that the Lord would answer your prayers and put you on the right path? Can you imagine dealing with all this without having that as something to hang on to?
I mean, it certainly, you know, gave us comfort. You know, I just truly, you know, I never really worried about that much. You know, even when we got fired, I just things will work themselves out, and they did. And you know, it definitely makes you count your blessings. And you know, I know Melissa and I both have kind of felt that way throughout the years.
When you got to the NBA, I mean, that's, for most people, that's the pinnacle. Is that kind of how you looked at it at the time? When you find, after going through all these different levels, and then you get to the NBA, the highest level of basketball, what was that feeling like for you?
You know, I think I've said this maybe in a different discussion with somebody, but sometimes it would hit me when I was in Philly, and I would drive, like, I lived in New Jersey, so I would drive over the Walt Whitman Bridge to get to the arena in Philly. And when you drive over that particular bridge and you look to your right, you see like the river, and then you see the cityscape of downtown Philly. And that, some moments when I would drive over the bridge, it would like hit me like, man, I can't believe I'm in like this big city and I'm working for this NBA team. Like, this is kind of crazy. And so it was definitely every now and then, you know, would be a situation where I'm like, man, this is pretty cool. But for the most part, like I said earlier, you're just immersed in the job. You don't have time to kind of even realize what you're doing. You're just worrying about how you're going to stop, you know, whichever player that night, or how you're going to score on, you know, this particular defense. You get lost in the job. But there were definitely moments where, you know, you're like, wow, man, this is pretty cool.
You've had opportunities to interview for NBA head coaching positions. And I know that even this last offseason, there were opportunities for you, and you've had interviews with other organizations. During some of those interviews, right around the same time, news broke that Mark Pope was going to leave BYU and become the head coach at Kentucky. When that happened, how aware at the time were you that BYU was about to play a pretty big role in your life moving forward?
Not very aware. I mean, BYU had always been in the back of my mind, and way, way back in my mind, honestly. But, you know, every offseason stuff swirls around, you know, in college and in the NBA. And so, you know, I've learned over the years that, you know, nothing should be unexpected. Like, everything's kind of on the table. So, didn't see it coming at the time, honestly. You know, I thought at some point in my life, I thought maybe this would be a discussion. I didn't think it would be now, honestly. And but it kind of goes back to the timing that we were speaking about. So it was, you know, just kind of came out of nowhere.
Well, it came out of nowhere, and things, for the most part, happened very quickly. How did it get presented mm-hmm. to you, and how was that? How did that process go that ultimately led to you being named the head coach?
Yeah, I mean, we were still in the regular season with the NBA. We were playing the Clippers on a back to back, and we were in LA. And I remember I had already gone through two rounds of interviews with the Nets, and I was scheduled to go meet their owner and their GM down in San Diego after our second night of the back to back with the Clippers. And so we played them. I jumped in a car, went down there, and interviewed with those guys. It was kind of my more or less probably my final interview with those guys. It went extremely well. And then I remember it's my first time ever flying on a private plane. They put me on a private plane. I'm flying to Sacramento. I'm just in this plane, like me and two pilots, and I'm just sitting there like trying to process, one, that I'm on a private plane for the first time, two, that I just interviewed for a NBA head coaching job in San Diego overlooking the ocean with the owner of an NBA team, and trying to think about potentially moving my family to Brooklyn. And so there's a lot to process, a lot going on there. Then we landed, and shortly after we landed, I ended up getting a call, you know, from, Brian Santiago reached out, and I didn't even know about the Mark Pope thing at the time. And so, obviously pretty surprised, and, I called my wife, told her. She was freaking out, honestly.
Freaking out good?
Good and bad. You know, again, it had always been in the back of her mind as well. And so, again, the timing, you know, we had talked a lot about Brooklyn. I also had an interview with Charlotte in this cycle. There might have been another one that had come up too. So we were, this wasn't on our radar. So I was on the road and we were trying to process everything. And then it just, like you said, things moved really quickly. Partially because the Brooklyn thing was starting to really, move pretty aggressively. And, I kind of let these guys know that, hey, I got other things kind of cooking that I've sort of been working my whole life for, And so, give them credit. They moved quickly and ultimately got it to the point where it just became really obvious that this is what we were going to do.
So what swayed you? I mean, because like you said, you're interviewing for mm-hmm. NBA coaching jobs and you thought that was the trajectory that you were going to go on, and then you get this opportunity. So what changed for you?
Yeah. I think a lot of factors, honestly. I mean, when you look at the landscape of just coaching in general, but specifically like in the professional ranks, it's cutthroat, which is something I always embrace. Like I never feared, hey, if I get a job in the NBA, I could get fired. Like I never feared that, I mean, there's obviously, financially there's a lot at stake, with some of the contracts that you can get as a head coach in the NBA. But the stability piece as it relates to moving my family around definitely weighed on me. My kids are in my mind, like had I have taken an NBA head coaching job in this cycle, by the time that first contract ends, you either get another one or you get fired and it's over. From that standpoint, then you're in flux with your family, which would coincide right around the time my oldest son would start high school. And so there was always this internal debate for me about, struggling like with wrapping my head around having to move my kids potentially, and stuff like that. And so I told my agent when this came up, I felt like this was a chance that we could really get some legitimate stability, which is very hard to get, I think, in coaching in general, but definitely in the pro side, it's even harder. And so, we kind of had a benchmark of what stability looked like in our mind, in terms of whether that's contract length, whether that's financial things and so forth. And so that was something me and my wife talked about. Like we kind of had our benchmark and we felt like if it could get to that, what would move the needle there was the stability that represented. Right. And so that I think above and beyond everything is probably what moved the needle for us initially. And then once I learned more about, BYU, how it operates, the amount of support. I mean, I knew some because I'd lived in the community. I have friends in the community. My brother's lived here for a long time. So I've kept a pulse on things. I understand, who the donors are, how involved they are. I did quickly learn that I felt like it was a place that, like I said before, was set up to succeed. And ultimately felt like with all those things in the fire together, like it was a spot that I could happily, not take an NBA head coaching job and feel like the trajectory of, our lives was going to be pretty cool.
Well, getting the job was just the beginning, because then the real work starts. For the first little while, you're doing two jobs because you are helping the Suns get ready for the playoffs against the Minnesota Timberwolves. So you've got that. You're now the new head coach at BYU. You're still worrying about getting a staff together. Mm-hmm. You've got players from the current or the previous team that are in the portal, and you've got to recruit them to try and come back and get recruiting starting. How did you handle? I mean, I've got to imagine you've had crazy times where you thought, I'm as busy as I've ever been. Does it even compare to what that time was like?
No, that was pretty wild, honestly. It was, we were on the road. We were, at Minnesota, basically, when all that was going on. And it was, I'd go to the Suns meetings and practice, and the second we'd get done, I'd run back to the hotel and, jump on a phone and essentially just work through the night, calling. And there's just so many things that needed to get done, like everything that you just mentioned. So I knew I had to you know, try to move fairly quick on at least some staff to kind of help lighten the load. You know, Brandon Dunson ended up being, you know, the first hire. He was tremendous. We moved quick on that. You know, Burgess was a quick second, and then it just kind of went from there. Eventually, I didn't hire a bunch of guys right out of the gate. I hired a couple, and then, you know, jumped on trying to retain the players that were here. You know, like you said, a bunch of them were in the portal, and once we were able to get some of that done, you know, that was able to give us a little bit of a foundation, and then we kind of built from there, and, you know, it was whirlwind of Zoom calls and trying to get people on campus and talking to agents and advisors and AAU people and just everybody under the sun. And it was a lot of work.
You mentioned in your press conference that, you know, your goal was to make BYU a place where athletes can come to develop, to go to the next level in the NBA. That's what you wanted this program to be. Why is that so important for you, and how has that been received as you're out on the recruiting trail?
I mean, I think why it was important was, you know, every player wants to play at the next level, you know, and I think with my background and the connections and just knowledge base that I have, it'd be foolish not to tap into that, because, again, I think that's most people's goals that come to college. They want to play at the next level, and so I felt like it was a no-brainer to tap into that. I think a byproduct of it, you get guys who are in that mindset and have the talent to do that. I think the byproduct is you're going to win a lot of college basketball games, right? And so I think it was a good marrying of those two ideas. And then in terms of how it's been received, I think it's you know, it's been received quite well. You know, I think, you know, people have seen that how we're operating and how we've set up the staff, who we've hired, how our development program's laid out. You know, it's very robust. It's very specific, just like you would see with an NBA team. And I think guys have been drawn to that. I think people's families have been drawn to that. I think people's advisors have been drawn to that. And so far, you know, happy with what we've been able to do.
With the players that you were able to get to come back, you know, guys like Dallin Hall and Richie Saunders, and I mean others, Dawson Baker's back from last year, and Foose, and then you've got all these guys that have chosen to come here, whether they're transferring from another school or these very high rated recruits coming into the program. The excitement level, to say that it is high, would be the understatement of the century. How much do you feel that right now?
Quite a bit. I mean, not just me. I think the whole staff feels it. You know, everybody involved with the program feels it, which is great. You know, I mean, you just, everyone's juiced on it. You know, it's fun to just kind of hear people have that much excitement, especially in an off season. You know, usually it's I'm sure it's, you know, it's more about, you know, like other things going on. So to kind of have that driving a lot of the excitement in the community has been fun, and I think our guys have kind of sensed it, and so you know, it's been great. I think it's been an eye-opener, quite frankly, to a lot of the coaches that were new to BYU. Even I'm new to BYU, but I, you know, grew up in a church, been around it and so forth, so I kind of knew the sort of fan base and I knew the reach of the school. I think a lot of our coaches didn't quite grasp that before they got here, but have quickly realized what they've gotten themselves into.
When you look at the roster construction, you know, I sort of equate it to, you know, we hear general managers and coaches during the NBA draft, we're just going to take best player available, then we'll figure out how to use them when we get here. Is that sort of what you've done with this roster? You just want to go out and get the best talent, and then we'll work wherever we can work with them, we're going to get them into the game. Talk to me about the roster construction and what you want this roster and this program to look like.
Yeah. You know, that's, when you're dealing with an NBA world, you know, especially when you're dealing with some of the high end, like high draft picks, I mean, I think best player, I mean, I've been in a lot of those meetings, and, you know, when you're a bad basketball team in the NBA, you want something to build around. So getting the best player available is probably the best strategy. I think with us, it was more, like you said, roster construction, a team building, right? Some, I think, that oftentimes gets kind of lost in certainly in pro sports, college maybe not as much, but I think that's a super important part of putting a team together, is how does everything fit? Like, so we, you know, there were certain things that we identified that we wanted to address, And I feel like we kind of methodically went through that. Now, there was some best player available moments for us, for sure. But I like the blend that we have, both in terms of age, in terms of skill set, in terms of size, length, shooting, you know, defense. So we did try to go after it more from a holistic standpoint and less of a let's just go get the best players and then roll the ball out. You know, I think there was a little bit more behind it than that.
One of the things that has stood out to me about the guys that you have, not only are they unbelievably talented that are coming into the program and guys that are returning that were here last year, but they all seem to be really good BYU fits. We were able to have Yegor Demin on BYU Sports Nation, and after that interview was done, just had a few minutes just to talk with him, just regular conversation, guy to guy. And I think that the part that I will remember most about talking with Yegor was not anything about talking about his game. It was just how humble and nice he came across and just how normal of a guy he was. Mm-hmm. And it seems like you've got a lot of those guys that not only can play basketball at an extremely high level, but are great BYU fits.
Yeah, I agree. I think we've been really impressed with the guys we've brought in terms of who they are as people, you know, who their families are. You know, that's, again, like I've said this to other people, you know, it's really not that dissimilar to how an NBA team operates. Like the common person minds would be blown if they knew how much intel NBA teams go after about players. They know everything. You can't hide anything. So they know everything about their family. They know everything about how they were as a student, how they act, what they do off the court, who their friends are, who their circles are. And I learned that in the league about how important it is to get good people. It's all about the people is a common phrase that, you know, business world uses, which I totally agree with. Now, obviously they have to have talent as well. So you have to blend the two, but you know, finding guys that are good, like you said, good people, we feel like, fit the BYU way. And we're not just bringing in anybody in here. It's allowed us to be selective, which is one of the reasons why BYU above all other colleges and universities always interested me, where I felt like the recruiting can be so daunting. Just the task of recruiting in general, I feel like the pool of players that we're going to go after isn't the entire country. And so it kind of streamlines things for us. And so far, you know, we've been able to find guys, to your point, that we feel like really fit in well.
How excited are you? You get to see them in practice. You get to see a lot more than obviously everybody else does. How excited are you to be able to show Cougar Nation this team and this program?
You know, it's we'll get there. You know, I think right now it's just the process of a lot of learning. You know, a lot of installing, a lot of trial and error, a lot of, you know, working through things. So the excitement in terms of once, like, putting the product out there, we'll definitely get there. We're just really focused on, you know, trying to just work through the kinks right now. Not just with the players, but with the coaches too. I've personally known most of these coaches, not all of them. But I've only actually worked with a handful of them before, so we're learning each other as well. You know, that's we're working through kinks, and I think the players feel that a little bit too. And so you do get excited about what things can be, but I think I'm just super focused on just the process of installing, like, our way, our style, our culture on both sides of the ball. And so, you know, we'll get there eventually in terms of being super excited to show the world what that looks like. But, you know, we got a lot of work ahead of us.
You're having fun though, right? This is fun for you, isn't it?
It is fun. And I think what I kind of underestimated from that standpoint was how fun it was going to be to just do something new and different. You know, I was on the pro side basically for 17 straight years, and you just kind of get into a rhythm and a routine of kind of how things go. And, you know, you don't necessarily stretch your mind as much when you're doing that. And not because it's the NBA, just because it's what you've been doing for a long time. So this is totally new. It's fresh. It's still basketball, but it's a lot different. I mean, I've never practiced this much my entire life as a pro as a professional, I should say, in my career, we've had, I don't even know how many practices. We've practiced maybe like 10 times in the NBA for a whole season. We have 10 practices in less than 2 weeks, right? And so it's totally different. And so how do you keep that fresh? How do you keep that engaged? How do you keep this thing rolling? Where I've been super lucky is, man, our guys play extremely hard. They compete. They love playing. They love just competing, honestly. And so it's been super fun to have that.
Well, I mentioned this at the beginning of the interview. I know your time is very precious. You got a lot going on. So thank you so much for doing this today. I really appreciate it.
Appreciate it. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks once again to my guest, Coach Kevin Young. My name is Jason Shepherd. Josh Bergstrom and Ben Hall produced this episode. Deep Blue's senior producer is Cleon Wall. You can download and subscribe to Deep Blue on all podcast platforms or find all episodes on the BYU Radio app. Deep Blue is a production of BYU Radio.